Hello and welcome to the Thursday, April 9th edition of the Salem News. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center. House bans social media sites for young teens. Boston. The State House of Representatives has approved legislation to ban social media use for children under age 14 and set tough statewide restrictions on cell phones in public schools. The Democratic-led proposal, which passed Wednesday on a largely party-line vote, would require Facebook, Instagram, and other social media platforms to block users 14 and younger. The companies will be required to get verifiable parental consent for users aged 14 or 15 and give parents access to data and content submitted by minors. This bill will protect children from harmful content and addictive algorithms and ensure that our students are able to focus in the classroom without the distraction from cell phones, House Speaker Ron Mariano, a Quincy Democrat, said ahead of the vote. Social media companies are increasingly blamed for rising rates of depression, suicide, and other mental health issues among youth nationally. In response, states and local governments are increasingly considering legislation and legal action to crack down on social media use. Parent groups, including Parents Collective Incorporated and Phone Free Action, are pressuring states and the federal government to approve the bans. Governor Maura Healey's office announced earlier this week that she would be holding a briefing Tuesday to unveil new social media regulations, but the event was abruptly canceled. No reason was given by her staff members. Attorney General Andrea Campbell is among a bipartisan group of 42 attorneys general suing Meta and other social media outlets, alleging features on Facebook and Instagram are addictive and aimed at kids and teens. It is critical that we hold tech companies accountable for designing social media platforms that keep young people addicted and wreak havoc on their mental health, Campbell said in a statement. I am grateful that the legislature is taking this issue seriously, and I look forward to working with them on the next steps. The bill will require school districts to educate students in age-appropriate ways about the responsible use of social media, including potential harms to emotional and mental health and bullying. While the proposal will require social media platforms to provide data submitted by teens to their parents if requested, it would prohibit the companies from sharing information about a minor's LGBTQ+ status with them. The House bill also seeks to restrict smartphone use during the school day by requiring districts to ban students from using personal electronic devices during school hours. The State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education would be directed to provide statewide guidance for implementing the bell-to-bell ban. The proposal also calls for a pilot program in 10 school districts to test technology that makes students' smartphones and other electronic devices inoperable on school grounds during the school day. The Senate approved a similar bell-to-bell cell phone ban last year, but didn't include a social media ban. Differences between both bills would need to be worked out by the negotiators before a final version heads to Healey's desk. If the legislation is approved, Massachusetts would join a growing number of states, including New Hampshire, California, Florida, and New York, to ban or restrict cell phones in schools, part of a broader effort to remove classroom distractions for students as concerns about their mental health mount. At least 80% of Massachusetts school districts already have some type of cell phone restrictions in place, according to the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents. And over in Danvers, board and neighbors oppose new ice rink. The planning board voted unanimously this week to give an unfavorable recommendation to town meeting on a zoning change that would make way for a new ice rink on Route 114. The rink would be built at 249 Andover Street, which is zoned as Residential 3 and sits next to the Home Depot at the interchange of Routes 1 and 114. A small single-story building that previously held the Bay State Animal Clinic is currently sitting empty on the property. The 31,000-square-foot rink would stand about 35 feet tall, have one sheet of ice, 48 parking spaces, and primarily be used for practices by Danvers Youth Hockey and the high school team, developer Mikhail Viniu told the board. It would be privately owned and the first indoor ice rink facility to operate in Danvers in decades. A citizen's petition organized by the owner of the property and the vet clinic, Dana McNamee, is requesting town meeting expand the abutting highway corridor zone to include this parcel. That zone starts at Home Depot and stretches until the edge of the Interstate 95 overpass that crosses Andover Street and covers most parcels between 95 and Route 1 until it stops at Rand Circle. The clinic was granted a use variance to operate on the parcel in the 1970s, back when Danvers allowed these types of variances. That's no longer the case, hence why developers want to be included in the highway corridor zone that permits commercial properties by right. The project has drawn concern from neighbors, not over the addition of an ice rink in Danvers. Rather, they don't want to see that parcel turn permanently away from residential use. At Monday's meeting, abutters said they worried about traffic and noise from the rink, how a large commercial building would look next to their properties, potential ledge blasting, and the disruption of a site that is mostly taken up by trees and wetland currently. The ice rink is proposed to go up at the back of the property off the street, as wetlands diagonally divide the parcel into two sections. A 70-foot-long bridge would be built over the wetlands to connect the new parking lot to Andover Street, according to current site plans. Neighbors advocated for keeping the plot as a buffer between their homes and the businesses on Route 114. "We're in this area for the purpose of being surrounded by woods, conservation, wildlife," Center Street resident Sandra Kesting said. "There's so much building going on, and the beauty of R3 is that we all have sizable yards or sizable acreage and that we are maintaining the wildlife. If the parcel stays in Residential 3 zoning, only a single-family home or two single-family homes with a shared driveway could go there by right unless another vet clinic moves in. Building housing is not economically feasible for the developers because of the wetlands on the property," said Brian DePice, the principal of the commercial real estate firm The Mega Group, which marketed the property. "We were quoted $600,000 to put a small bridge over some wetlands," DePice said. "The numbers are not penciling out for a single-family developer. The site is useless for residential. Developers considered putting some sort of school on the property, a use that can more easily bypass zoning regulations under state law. That idea was also not financially feasible," DePeace said. Residents worried if the zoning change goes through at town meeting, but developers later nix plans for an ice rink, a more undesirable, unsightly commercial building would go up instead. "Residential property open space is very rare," town meeting member Joanne Ragucci said. "We need to keep protecting it." The board voted 4-0 to recommend the proposed zoning change unfavorably. Member Dave Rodriguez said there are too many unknowns around the proposal for him to vote in favor. Member Jean Hartnett felt the change would be unfair for abutters, and Chair Louis George noted the commercial business on the property currently was only allowed through a zoning rule no longer on the books. Viniu said neighbors' feedback would be incorporated into the project. "Every abutter here has brought up valid reasons why this could be a not good development, Vinayu said Monday, but I just wanted to say that we will do our best effort to mitigate this and we will see it through to the finish. Public invited to comment on Salem's draft action plan initiatives Thursday. Mayor Dominic Pangallo has released the city's draft action plan for federally funded community and economic development initiatives for the next fiscal year, outlining priority activities for anticipated funding with a public hearing on the draft plan set for Thursday. The draft action plan for fiscal 2027, which begins July 1st, details a variety of initiatives targeted for future funding through the Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnerships Program, which are funded through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The draft plan will be available for public comment through May 4th. CDBG and HOME funding assists income-eligible households and low-to-moderate-income neighborhoods through various programs, services, and improvements. The draft plan includes proposed activities targeting public services, economic development, public facilities, and infrastructure and affordable housing. Economic development initiatives include proposals for technical and financial assistance for small businesses, as well as grants to nonprofit agencies for social service programs such as homelessness and foreclosure prevention, food distribution, job training, child care, substance abuse prevention, and other programs that advance self-sufficiency, reduce household financial burdens, and improve quality of life. Salem anticipates receiving $1,080,000 in CDBG funds for the new year, $100,000 in HOME funds, and a projected $80,000 in program income. Total spending outlined in the draft plan, however, is at $1,340,000. The actual funding allocations for FY27 aren't available yet, the city says, and all proposed budgets will be proportionally increased or decreased from the estimated funding levels to match actual allocation amounts. The city is proposing $169,380 in grant funding for 14 social service agency programs to assist an estimated 3,725 people. This includes funding for initiatives such as HAWC's Domestic Violence Shelter, LEAP for Education's College and Career Ready Program for Salem Teens, the North Shore CDC and Center Board's Housing Stabilization Work, the Salem YMCA After School Program, the Salem Pantry's Mobile Market Distribution, and the Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, and the North Shore Community Action Program's Homeless Prevention Program. Various park, public facility, and infrastructure improvements are pegged at $220,620. Projects being considered including rehab of a historic granite tomb wall at the Broad Street Cemetery, improvements to High Street Park, improvements to Mary Jane Lee Splash Pad, design and construction of Jefferson Avenue complete streets improvements and drainage and water quality upgrades for Jefferson Avenue, improvements to the Broad Street parking lot, installation of speed humps in the Point neighborhood, and improvements to Salem Street. Activities related to creating and maintenance of affordable housing are proposed at $165,000 for a housing rehab loan program for four households, $5,000 for a first-time home buyer down payment assistance loan program for one household, $50,000 for tenant-based rental assistance for two households, and $50,000 for a pool of funds for when opportunities arise for creation of affordable housing units. CDBG and HOME funds allow Salem to complete community and economic development initiatives that significantly enhance the quality of life for its residents, Pangalo said. These funds facilitate improvements to infrastructure such as streets, sidewalks, parks, and neighborhood facilities. It's also used to support local businesses and create economic opportunities. Additionally, these funds support crucial social service programs that encompass a wide range of activities ranging from youth services and food access to housing stability. The full draft plan is available at salemmass.gov/500, as well as the Salem Public Library, Salem Housing Authority, and at the Department of Planning and Community Development. A public hearing for comment on the draft plan is set for Thursday, that's today, 6 p.m. at the City Hall Annex, 98 Washington Street. Written comments can also be addressed to Salem's Department of Planning and Community Development by May 4th. Moulton echoes calls for Trump's impeachment. Boston. Democratic U.S. Rep. Seth Moulton is joining calls for President Donald Trump to be impeached a third time, saying the Republicans' erratic, unhinged threats against Iran showed that he is unfit for office. Moulton, who is running for U.S. Senate, said Trump is unlikely to step down or be removed by his own cabinet, and said his social media posts and actions leave Congress with no choice but to move forward with impeachment proceedings. Congress needs to come back into session immediately, assert its constitutional authority, and begin impeachment proceedings, Moulton, a Salem Democrat, said in an email to supporters. We have the tools to stop this. Republicans are missing the backbone. Moulton's campaign posted an online poll Tuesday asking supporters if they back impeachment. The results of the survey weren't immediately known. Earlier this week, Trump issued an ultimatum for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a key energy transport route, and agree to other terms to end the U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign by 8 p.m. Tuesday. Trump posted a profanity-laden rant on social media warning that a whole civilization will die if Iranian officials didn't agree to the terms. But just hours before Tuesday night's deadline, the president announced a 2-week ceasefire he said will include a reopening of the strait to freighters. Moulton, a former Marine captain reelected 5 times in the 6th District, said Trump's erratic, unhinged threats damaged U.S. credibility and endangered the lives of members of the military serving in the Middle East. He said the president's actions are the latest sign that he is unfit to be commander-in-chief. This isn't tough talk, and it isn't strategy, Moulton wrote to his supporters. It's a man who is not fit to hold the power he has. Moulton's push for impeachment proceedings adds to a growing course of criticism from Democrats over the president's decision to attack Iran, which has seen the deaths of at least 13 service members. More than a dozen Democratic lawmakers have called for Trump to be impeached. The occupant of the White House is openly threatening genocide, Representative Ayanna Pressley, D-Mass, posted earlier this week. Congress must stop this war, and Trump must be removed from office. Moulton's rival in the U.S. Senate race, incumbent Senator Ed Markey, claims Trump's comments amounted to genocide and has echoed calls with the House to begin impeachment proceedings. He is completely unstable and dangerous, Markey said in a social media video Tuesday. Impeachment is the top priority. No more war criminal in the White House. The U.S. Constitution allows Congress to remove presidents before their terms are finished for committing treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Trump is the only president to have been impeached twice, but neither proceeding resulted in his removal from office. Congress impeached Trump during his first term in the White House for abuse of power and obstruction in December 2019, but he was acquitted by the Republican-led U.S. Senate. Trump was impeached by the House again in 2021 on charges he incited the attack on the U.S. Capitol building, but the effort met a similar fate in the upper chamber. Every member of the state's all-Democratic congressional delegation supported both impeachment proceedings. Fundraiser to benefit Beverly Farmers Market. A fundraiser benefiting the Beverly Farmers Market will be held at Backbeat Brewing Company on April 18th. From noon to 3 p.m. that day, the public is invited to stop by the brewery and purchase vegetables, herbs, and flower seedlings and meet local farmers, getting a first look at the vendor lineup for the Farmers Market's 18th season. The Beverly Farmers Market will run from 3 to 7 p.m. every Monday, except on holidays, from June 15th to October 5th at Odell Veterans Memorial Park on Rantoul Street. And on the real estate Q&A, our neighbor's three dogs are running wild. Question, our neighbor two doors down lets their dogs run wild. They have a fence, but they never keep the gate closed, and their three dogs are always all over the neighborhood doing their business on various lawns and bothering people. Is there anything we can do to stop this? Answer. Handling neighborhood problems can be tough, especially when pets are involved. While many people love dogs, most do not like them wandering freely, causing disruptions or leaving messes. If your neighbor's dogs are running loose, it is crucial to handle the situation calmly and thoughtfully. Safety should always be your top priority. Loose dogs can pose dangers to themselves, other animals, and people. If the dogs appear aggressive or unpredictable, avoid approaching them directly. Instead, keep a safe distance and consider capturing photos or videos of their behavior. This will be helpful later if you need to involve authorities. If the dogs are just wandering and causing minor nuisances, you might be able to resolve the issue without escalating the situation. Start by having a polite conversation with your neighbor. Approach them when they are not busy or distracted and explain the problem in a non-confrontational way. For example, you might say, "I've noticed your dogs have been getting out of the yard and wandering around the neighborhood. I'm concerned about their safety and the impact it's having on other neighbors." Sometimes people are unaware of the inconvenience their pets cause, and a friendly chat can lead to a solution. If the problem continues and you live within a community association, speak with the property manager about the issue. You can also review your local laws and ordinances about pet ownership. Many cities and towns have leash laws or rules requiring owners to keep their dogs on their property. This information is usually available on your city or county's website. If your neighbor is breaking these rules, you might need to file a formal complaint with animal control or your local government. Be ready to give details about the situation, including dates, times, and any documentation you have. Keep documenting incidents and following up with authorities as needed. Finally, remember to be polite, patient, and persistent. Resolving neighborhood disputes can take time, especially if the other party is uncooperative. By remaining calm, polite, and proactive, you will improve your chances of finding a solution that works for everyone involved. And finally, in today's Dear Abby, sibling ready to limit time with obnoxious sister. Dear Abby, for the past 3 years, my family has had reunions with my older half-sister, Sybil. We did not grow up together, and we have very different lifestyles. I grew up with little money and numerous hardships. Sybil grew up having every need and want met. She's successful and wealthy. I am proud of her and everything she has accomplished, but she is difficult to be around. Sybil is materialistic and talks constantly about everything she has. She's class conscious and uncomfortable in low-class environments, like affordable restaurants and stores, It literally makes me ill. I can no longer spend time with Sybil, which is why I won't be able to show up for family reunions the way I did before. How do I let Sybil know I can't do anything more than grab a bite to eat or have a cup of coffee to catch up? I don't want to hurt or offend her. How can I explain why I can no longer spend time with her? Incompatible in Montana. Dear Incompatible, how about telling Sybil that you are busy and won't be coming to all of the gatherings that you used to attend, but you would love to catch up with her for a cup of coffee when they are over or at a later date? You do not have to give her any other relative. You do not have to give her or any other relative a more detailed explanation than that. Dear Abby, we live on a street with garage access via a commercial alley. My neighbor uses his garage to store a collector's vehicle along with bicycles and other boxed items. Every few months, he removes the car to clean his garage. He doesn't sweep. He blows the trash from the garage into the middle of the alley into a pile. Then he returns the car and other items, closes the garage door, and leaves his trash in the alley. Last week, the trash pile was 20 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 3 inches high. The wind and cars that drive over the pile scatter the debris into neighbors' lots, commercial property, parking areas, etc. On several occasions, I have spoken to him nicely, as have other neighbors, about sweeping up the pile and putting it into the trash receptacle, which is within 5 feet of the pile. The debris ultimately enters storm drains in the adjacent river, which pollutes our shoreline and environment. The man always responds with, "Good to know," and "We'll do so next time," but the behavior hasn't changed in 10 years. He's a well-educated high school teacher at a prestigious school, so we are baffled about why he continues to trash the neighborhood with his mess. Any advice on what can be done? Exasperated in California. Dear Exasperated, I think 10 years is long enough to wait for your neighbor to show some consideration, don't you? Pick up the phone and contact your city's code enforcement bureau and report the address where this is happening. The bureau can help by sending an inspector to the property to assess and take photos. A case will be created if the property owner does not comply with the city's regulation. And that's it for today's edition of the Salem News. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center, and I thank you for listening.